We're doing our class on Pirkei Avot in the Jewish home. And we had left off in the second chapter, the ninth Mishnah, where we had met up with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the disciple of Hillel and Shammai, and his five disciples. And he had told us their strengths. And then Amar Lahem, he said to them, Tzu'u re'u, I want you to go out and see. Ezo yiderech tova sheidbak baha adam. And some have the version here, Ezo yiderech yeshara, what is the good path, what is the straight path, that a person should cling to. And it's interesting because in life, sometimes we have to define our path for ourselves. And it's one of the strengths of a person, and it's one of the strengths of a home. And it's a strength that we sometimes don't recognize ourselves. What are the traits that define us? What are the things that are important to us? You know, in certain homes, they stress honesty. In certain homes, they stress having an open home. In certain homes, they stress speaking favorably about people. We have to try and define and strengthen a path in our life. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said to his students, I want you to see which is the good path that a person should cling to. Rabbi Eliezer omer, Ein tova, good eye. A person should be happy with his lot. And in a certain sense, this is the key to happiness. If you give your kids everything, but you teach them an attitude of complaining, the school isn't good, the teacher isn't good, the government isn't good, the municipality isn't good, the garbage men don't come on time, your ride comes too early, your mother breaks the food too salty. There are people who have comments about everything. Well, then you can give your kids everything, they will never be happy. And if you teach them to be appreciative, then you don't have to give them a lot. And they'll be very happy, and you've given them the greatest gift in the world. And the same thing holds true within the marriage. If a person looks at what he'd like to have, he's never going to be happy. If he looks at the gifts that he already has, then he could always be happy. Ayin tova, it's all a question of your eye. How do you view things? Very often if people ask me why I'm upset, if I'm close enough to them, I'll tell them, because I haven't yet worked on myself. I have to work more on myself. If I'd be a better person, I wouldn't be upset. I'm upset because A or B or C didn't go right. But the truth is, there's so much that did go right. There's so much to be thankful for. That the true answer, why am I upset? Because I'm not yet good enough. So Rabbi Eliezer says, when his Rebbe tells him, go seek out that good path, Rabbi Eliezer says, Ein tova, a good eye. Being happy with your lot, seeing things positively. Rabbi Yeshua omer chaver tov, a good friend. What's better than a good friend? But in order to have a good friend, you have to know how to be a good friend. Very often we have expectations. Expectations from our spouse, from our friends. And we fail to see how we are short of those expectations. It's mind-boggling how people can be in a situation and only see what's external to themselves and not see their own faults. And part of what a good friend does for us is help us see ourselves. There was a couple who were dating, and everything was going well. And then the wife said, the woman said, look, when you smoke, it really gives me a headache. You have to stop. You can't smoke when I'm here. And so on the next date, he promptly pulls out his cigarette and lights it. And she laughs, and she gives him an ashtray. She says, please. And he continues smoking. And he has a principle. She's not going to tell me where I do and don't smoke. And she laughs, but she has a hard time with it. You know, why are you smoking? I told you it really gives me a headache. So they get into a fight and they break up. Now this is a couple that was not far from engagement. A day or two goes by and he's really upset. And he meets up with a friend of his. Guys, this is a true story. I know all parties involved. I heard it firsthand from them. I wasn't involved in the story, but I heard it firsthand from the parties. I heard it from him and her. And he meets up with a friend of his. And his friend tells him, why are you upset? And he says, well, I dated this girl and went really well. But then she has this foolish thing where she thinks she's going to tell me when I do and don't smoke. So his friend says, what do you mean? He says, well, she says that she can't have me smoking around the house. That gives her a headache. And I say that I'm not about to get married to someone who's going to tell me where to smoke and where not to smoke. And his friend tells him, you better go have your head examined. So he says, what do you mean? You think your wife's going to tell you where to smoke and where not to smoke? And his friend tells him, you're telling me she's right in every other way? So a cigarette is more important to you than marrying a woman who's right for you? You're crazy. That's a good friend. They're married till today.
Wow. Did he stop smoking altogether?
Almost. I met him recently after... I didn't know if he was smoking or not smoking. And he told me he had two big changes in his life. One was, once upon a time they used to have smoking and non-smoking sections on flights. So he was once on a flight, and of course he took the smoking section. And then the guy sitting next to him smoked some brand of cigarettes that gave him such a blasting headache that the whole flight his head was bursting. And he said to himself, this is what she meant all those years? I can never imagine what it felt like. And when he one flight, felt what she was saying all along, that's it. Then he had much more respect for what she was saying. And then I don't remember when I met him recently, he said another experience showed him something else, and he's almost stopped smoking totally. But that doesn't matter. But what's a good friend? That's the point. So there are two points I'm saying here. One is, a good friend is someone who could sometimes tell you what no one else is going to tell you. You're crazy. He's sometimes going to put you in your place and say you're nuts. And the second point is that very often we don't see ourselves, and we need that good friend, and that good friend will often be our wife, or we have to be a good friend to our wives. If a wife does something that's wrong, so you don't have to embarrass her publicly, but sometimes you do have to say something. If a wife is going to do something that's completely chutzpahdik to her own parents, to your parents, to her grandparents, so you're not supposed to go along with it. You know, if the wife says, let's put a bucket of water over the door in honor of Purim so that when my father walks into our house, it falls on his head. Don't go along with that. That's wrong. You're supposed to have their heads for your parents. I don't care. Practical jokes. If you think they're funny, do them on yourself. Do them on someone else. But parents are not to be played, don't play practical jokes on parents. So a chaver tov, a good friend, isn't only someone who's always going to go with us. The point of a good friend is that we grow together. Part of growth is being able to help do what's right. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shachem Tov. Rabbi Yossi says, make sure you have a home where you have good neighbors. You have good neighbors, that's everything. And a person has to know that we are very, very affected by our neighbors. Chazal say, when a woman is found to have committed adultery, we try to find different angles, and one of the things the courts will tell her is, you know, we understand that a lot of bad things can come from bad neighbors. A lot of things can happen if there's a bad neighbor. Chazal warned us time and again, we have to choose the community we live in. We have to choose who our neighbors are. We have to make sure we're in a place that will help us grow. And this is a very hard point for Machon Meir students, because almost everyone here came from a territory that was no man's land. And in that sense, almost everyone here is almost a self-made man. But you have to know that your continued growth and your spiritual health and your family's spiritual health, to a great extent, is contingent on what neighbors, who they're going to see. What are they going to see? You know, we're in a certain neighborhood here. So on the one end, you don't want your kids to be in a total bubble, right? So you find ways to expose them to concepts. We got on the plane and my kids saw that everyone has a screen in front of them. So it took them about 3 hours to figure out that they could get their screen to show videos. So I said, that's a great opportunity. So we sat down and discussed what videos are and what TV is. And I told them, we're going to be going to the United States to see a lot of families with TVs and videos. And they're all fine people and we love them and respect them, but we don't do that. And you'll look around on the plane and you'll see other people watching videos. And I got to tell you, videos are fun things to watch. I'm not telling you they aren't. But in our family, we don't do that. At their age, that's all they could understand. I can't explain to them more than that. But I want them to understand they'll see Jews doing this. I don't want them to think those Jews are doing something bad. I want them to think those are fine Jews. But I want them to understand we don't do that. So we come to America, and they come to someone's house, and they see this big screen in the living room. So we're standing there in silence for a minute, and the kids turn around and they say, "What a big computer!" So we said, "Right, okay." And then we're at someone else's house, and they see the guy has a TV. So they said, "We don't do that." And then they look at me and they say, "Well, why do they?" Okay, so those are fair questions. You know, you're not trying to keep your kids in a bubble in the sense that they shouldn't know what exists. On the other hand, you're not trying to expose them to every form of defilement that's out there. So there's a balance where, at some age, I know I'm going to have to take my kids and show them a video and show them what TV is all about and expose them to it. If you keep it something that's totally hidden, non-existent, you're creating something that's almost, you're creating a tremendous temptation for them. If you expose them and you show them a little bit, so then there's a balanced way of doing it. Now, this I heard from Rav Shlomo Fischer in Hanov. Rav Shlomo Fischer, he should live and be well, the brother of the Dayan Fischer. He once told us in a class that the way to do chinuch is this balance. But if you're living in a society where every day they're seeing things that are improper, so then their sense of right and wrong is constantly being clouded. I was very thankful when we came to the United States and my kids were shocked. They asked me, "How come people are walking around half naked?" I was happy. I said, "Wow, that's nice. I never realized they're not used to seeing this." My 2-year-old son asked, "Why doesn't she pull down her sleeve?" He saw a woman with a sleeveless. So he said, "Why don't you, Abba, why doesn't she pull down her sleeve?" He thought she got dressed and forgot to pull down her sleeve. So I said, "Wow, I didn't even realize that you grew up in a certain neighborhood. They're not used to this immodesty. I think that's a positive thing." So in time, they get exposed to it. They see the real world. And unfortunately, that's what our real world is. It's unfortunate. But there's this balance between exposing and, on the other hand, keeping the home front a place which is normal on the one hand, but a nice, safe, quiet zone for them where they get a sense of normalcy. I'm not saying they shouldn't have a concept of what anything is. But I'm saying you got to maintain normalcy in your home. And part of that is choosing the community you live in. We used to live in a place where at night we'd hear husbands yelling and beating their wives. And we'd hear people cursing all night long outside our window. And I remember when we first moved here to Givat Shul, I remember the first morning waking up and hearing the neighbor's son saying "Mode Ani" out loud. And I said to myself, "Isn't that nice? Isn't that the way a kid should grow up? Why should my son wake up hearing the neighbor downstairs yelling at his wife? Shouldn't he be waking up hearing "Mode Ani"? Isn't that normal?" I think that's normal. So I'm saying, Rav Yossi says something that's very powerful. He says, you want to choose a good path, it's about the community. I think a lot of it depends on where a person is holding. Meaning growth has to be gradual. If you take a person that was accustomed to watching TV and you tell them one day stop watching TV, I'm talking about you guys. I'm not talking about your children yet. Meaning a person has to be comfortable with where he's at. And there also has to be a certain level of consistency. Meaning if when you're going to visit your parents, you're going to be glued to the screen. Or if you're going to open up YouTube and watch all the movies through other ways of watching them, but you're going to say, "I don't have a TV." But then through the internet, you end up watching everything, or you're going to bring in DVDs and watch everything. So yeah, you're better off than a TV. It's more controlled. It is better than a TV at the end of the day. But at some point, the kids are going to sense that, what's the difference? You gain on the front that you have more control. But you lose on the front that the kids are going to say, okay, if DVDs are okay, then fine. You could teach kids that there are kosher DVDs and non-kosher DVDs. That's also fine. I'm just saying there has to be a certain consistency. And a person has to be at the stage where he's consistent with it. And then if a person is going to choose, okay, I'm okay, and my wife is okay with not having a TV at home. And you know, I have a computer which can play DVDs. I don't think I ever in my life played a DVD on my computer, not knowingly. You know, yeah, I have a DVD with the Bar Ilan CD. You know, Bar Ilan with all the responsa. So I have that. Okay, my wife works on the internet, but she'll only go on the internet at night when the kids are sleeping. There's a limit to how long we're going to be able to hold that out. And then at some point, we're going to have to make a decision how we're going to do this. You have to think about what is the kid seeing and how you explain it then. On one end, you know, my kids know how to use a computer a little bit, and I'm happy. You know, they have to know how to use a computer, and I'm going to want them to know how to use a computer. On the other end, kids can access the internet, and it's very normal that they're going to be attracted to pornography. And that's one of the problems on the internet. There are other problems on the internet. You have to think practically how you're going to save them from that, if you're going to expose them to that. I've wanted to remove the internet from my home, but Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of listeners, and the only way I can upload Shiurim, and my wife has a job that's all through the internet, it's not possible right now. We're going to have to reanalyze this in a year or two as the kids get older. I'm talking about me, myself. You know, it's a challenge. And the challenge is getting more and more difficult. I didn't open a Facebook account till guys in the Machon asked me to. So now I'm head of the Machon Meir group on Facebook. I don't have time to access it. I access it, you know, once every few weeks. But I still have a Facebook account. would I want my kids to have a Facebook account? No. You know, there have been a lot of children molested and kidnapped and all kinds of things through MySpace and Facebook. It's a very dangerous place for kids, the internet. On the one hand, you want them to know how to use the tools of the generation. On the other hand, you want to protect them from the dangers of these tools. And that's a challenge. And a lot of it depends on the home you're bringing up in general. Is the general recommendation a person should not have TV at home? Yes. Person should not have a TV at home. Now, what do you do about the internet and all the immodest pictures that are there? Do you get internet Rimon, or how do you work it out? You
have to see. Filters?
Rimon has filters, yeah. Okay. They have different levels of filters. You choose
there
what level. Not yet. But at any rate, I'm saying a lot of it is a question of what home you could bring up in a balanced and consistent way. The key here is balance and consistency. And in order to get balance, you should really consult with people in chinuch. I could tell you that before my wife accepted this job on the internet, we went to our Rav and we consulted with him because we were also concerned. I strongly recommend consult with people. Other people have been through this and see what the challenges are and what the ways around it are. You have to learn how to work with the technology of today. But at the same time, you have to be aware of the dangers that are out there. For example, there have been more than one marriage ruined here in this community, right? And in many communities, because the wife met a friendly guy in the chat room or the husband met a friendly girl in the chat rooms. You'd like to think in the film world that's not what's going to happen. You have to be realistic. Now, that might be something that you wouldn't have thought of when you started using the internet. It's a challenge. We're not only talking about pornography, we're not only talking about the potential dangers for children. We're also talking about A, normal adults also are attracted to pornography, and B, there are people online. You know, you wouldn't go to a mixed party and start chatting with a bunch of women, I think, once you're married. So should you be in chat rooms with other women talking about things? And it can all start innocently, you know, from sites that have chinuch discussions. But if Chani is always talking with Chaim, and Chani's married, and Chaim's married, but Chani doesn't see eye to eye with her husband on Chinuch Eishes, and Chaim doesn't see eye to eye with his wife on Chinuch Eishes, and Chani and Chaim are hitting it off time and again on all their Chinuch discussions in a very kosher site, things can develop improperly. I can tell you, I was once interviewed for a position as a rabbi of a community, and one of the questions they asked me was how I view my role with the women in the community. And my answer was, this requires a lot of thought, and I haven't yet worked it out, because I think that there, even a rabbi of a community, even not in a chat room, is in a very precarious position, and he has to define guidelines to ensure that that things are held in the proper form and things remain modest. Because, you know, if a woman, imagine a woman who's being beaten by her husband comes knocking at the rabbi's door. She's at a very vulnerable emotional situation there at that moment of her life. She needs the rabbi to help her out, but the relationship also has to remain in a certain realm, which is proper. So you have to work out guidelines. I have guidelines for now, but to be a rabbi of a community requires new guidelines. So that's, I'm saying, all these things require thought. Right.
And you don't think that would work for
me? What?
You don't think that would work for me around the issue?
Well, the question is, what happens when your wife is out with the kids at a PTA or whatever it is, and the woman comes knocking at the door? You can't exactly turn her away, and on the other hand, you have to figure out what you're going to do. Saying, Darcy, when you're a rabbi of a community, you have less control of who's coming knocking when.
Yeah.
I'm in a position where I can usually have more control. Okay, so, yeah.
One of my rabbis said that, if you're dating a girl, she says, oh yeah, I want you to learn, be very good, and then you find out about a day later that she's not really, she probably really wants you at home most of the time. Instead of going out to night sit or stuff like that, she'd rather be sitting at home. So, and it's really, you really cannot tell what the outcome is. You just really have to die. Would you rather agree with that?
I don't say that pertains to here.
No, because that was leading up to the second question.
So let's leave that for Thursday night, because it's a longer discussion than a 1 second answer. Sorry. So he asked them, see, what is the good path that a person should cling to? And we said that people should try to make paths in life, that this is what his home is going to focus on, this is what he's going to focus on. We have to try to take things that we cling to. And Rav Lezer said, Ein Tova, a person should be generous. You have guests, you could be less generous or more generous. So you walk into marriage, a person could be less generous or more generous. A person should strive to be a generous person, to have a good eye. How does a person feel when he actually gives something? Chazal say, if you give something with a sour face, sometimes you would have been better if you hadn't given it. And if you don't give, sometimes the mere fact that you give a warm approach is better than had you given something. Rabbi Yeshua says, Chaver tov, stick to a good friend, and that'll help you stick to a good path. And it also means be a good friend. To be a good friend means be a calm person, a kind, a giving person, a loving person, and then people will feel that you're a good friend. Rabbi Yossi Omer Shachento, be a good neighbor. What does it mean to be a good neighbor? It means when you see your neighbor carrying up the groceries, you help him out. How many people like you? How many people want to be close to you? It's easy to be nice to the guy who lives 10 blocks down and you meet in shul once a year. It's harder to be nice to the next door neighbor whose laundry is dripping on your laundry and whose kids are knocking on your door in the middle of the night and who you hear waking up in the morning and you hear, it's a little bit harder. So Rabbi Yossi says, if you could be a good neighbor, meaning be good to those people who you see day in and day out, and that's what makes it hard to be a good spouse. Why is it that people who are horrible spouses could be nice people in the community? Because everyone else, you only see for 2 minutes, 5 minutes at a time. How long do you see them for? But when you're married to someone, then you see them every minute. So then it's a little harder to put on the facade. So being a good neighbor is one step closer to really being a good person. Rabbi Shimon Omer HaRo'et HaNolad, a person who looks and sees what the outcome of things is going to be. Because the truth is that the only reason that a person sins, the only reason we do foolish things is because we don't think about what the outcome of what we do is going to be. If a person would only think for a moment, where's all this going to lead me to, then his behavior would be different. And the same thing would be true with Ben Adam Nachavero, how we treat his fellow man. If we'd only think what kind of reputation we're gaining, and again, where's it all going to lead to, then we'd behave differently. I once taught in a school where a new teacher came in. So I was teaching, and this new teacher came in, And for some reason, he felt like I was threatening him. Now, he came into school. He was the new guy. I wasn't even the new guy. And he'd walk over in the middle of a class I'd give and start telling me what I was saying wrong. So, okay, you know, you hear it once, you hear it twice, you hear it three times. So it would reach a point that when he'd come over, I'd stop and I'd say, "Bechavod, you know, you have what to say, I'm listening." And I never argued with him. I'd always just compliment him. I figured I'm not going to win. You know, I'm young. He was old enough to be my father, at least, maybe my grandfather. A man walks over with a long white beard and starts telling you, "This isn't how you read the Gemara, read it this way." So I'd listen and try to be respectful, and that's it. I accepted it. I didn't say anything. Figured I'm not going to win, and there's nothing I can do. So this happens once, this happens twice, this happens three times, and every time I'd say, "Wow, that's such an insight." I figured I got to do something that the students gain something from this. You know, if all they see is this guy bashing me, they gain nothing. So I tried to take the positive of what he'd say and give it over to the students. And every time he'd say something, I'd compliment it, and I'd say, "Wow, that's such an interesting point. Look at what a good point he just pointed out to us. We could have read this like this." I figured, you know, this way the students get something out of it. So after a few times that this happened, and every time I'd compliment what he'd say, so things started turning around. I didn't know what to do with it. I figured I don't see any way out, you know. What can I do? But after complimenting him a few times and showing how good he was, I suddenly had the biggest ally with the administration, with the school, because every time he'd say, "You know what a great teacher that guy is?" I don't know why he thought I was a great teacher. Every time he'd walk into class, he'd have a comment. But because I'd always compliment what he said, so then he'd return the favor. And when we're told, look at what the outcome of what you're going to do is going to be. Think about it for a moment. I just kept asking myself, if I answer him back, what am I going to gain? I always felt like telling him, "Mister, what do you think you're doing to the students, walking into a teacher and telling him he doesn't know what he's doing?" I'd always feel like saying that, and I'd say to myself, "But what am I going to gain? I'm not going to convince him otherwise, and I gain nothing." So every time I just say, "Okay, think what's going to come out of all this, and the only good thing that can come out of this is if you see the positive in what he's doing." And I couldn't even envision how good it would turn out. You know, then I had a surprise that he didn't about face. Rabbi Elazar Omer and Rabbi Elazar taught us, Lev Tov. Lev Tov, have a good heart. All traits come from the heart. If you have a good heart, everything good comes out of it. And Amar Lahem, he said to them, Rani Divrei Elazar ben Arachmi Divrehem. I see what he said more than yours, Shebichlal Dvarav Divrehem. And when I was dating, so I went to Rav Pesin Zatzal, and I asked him, "What am I supposed to look for when I started dating?" So he said to me, "What do you mean? The Mishnah says the bottom line, Lev Tov, a good heart encompasses everything. You guys are going to see Be'ezrat Hashem when you're married. The first step that happens in marriage is that you think, my wife isn't doing anything. And then you tell yourself, okay, she's doing something, but she demands so much of me. And then you tell yourself, well, why does she want me to do A or B or C? And then after about 5 or 10 years, hopefully you'll wisen up and you'll come to the realization she's doing an awful lot. Most husbands don't begin to appreciate what their wives are doing. After 5 or 10 years, they might begin to appreciate what their wives are doing. The nature of what a wife does is that she's always modifying her schedule and her life to fit other people. And the few times when she doesn't is when the husband gets all annoyed. Wait a second, why? Why do I have to change my life? Why? If he'd only really look at the whole picture, he'd see that in the whole picture, she's really modifying her life 10 times more than the husband. And so what Rav Pesin told me is what you have to look for when you're dating is a lev tov, a good heart. Because by its very nature, the job of being a mother and a wife and a daughter and a daughter-in-law, all the different roles that a wife plays, requires a lev tov, a good heart. I would recommend for women to look for a guy with a lev tov. But it's not as critical as for a wife. The main midah that you need, that we need to develop in ourselves, and that we should look for in a spouse, what Rav Pesin told me is that this Mishnah is, you want to know the halacha bottom line, what you look for in a wife, it's a lev tov, it's a good heart.